Don't let those other guys make your family share data. Switch to T-Mobile now and get four lines with up to 6 gigs each of 4G LTE data. Just $30 a line and no sharing. So ditch your data worries and switch to the Un-carrier today. Get to T-Mobile or call 1-800-T-Mobile.
Limited time offers plus taxes and fees. Capable device required. Coverage not available in some areas. See store for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney. This is the spot. This is the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. You know, brains, we're once an adult and twice a child. Aging in Independence with my guest Linda Andrews today out of Las Vegas, Nevada is going to shine a light on that. Because, you know, we all going to get a turn at the wheel, God willing. And aging is not for punks. It is no joke. Not for the faint at heart. So I'm glad that you decided to come over to the Edge, and I hope you brought Mama and Daddy with you so they can hear, you know, how we feel as the caregivers of them, and someone is going to one day have to care for us. Linda Andrews is the Director of Business Development at Quality, again, out of Las Vegas, Nevada. And we're going to share with you, brains, some of our personal challenges, but also the benefits of being caregivers for our aging parents. We're going to provide you with some information and some resources, but also some relief for your grief. So please help me welcome to the Edge, Linda Andrews. I want to read her bio real quick. She is my girl from way back. We used to hang like wet rags over the Edge. But time brings about a change, and with that change, now she has a marketing degree from Regis University and over 27 years experience being a patient advocate. She is a lifetime volunteer for the American Cancer Society and has been a beacon in Las Vegas since 2009 by qualifying patients for home health and hospice. Currently, she holds the title of Director of Business Development and Marketing for Quality. Please help me welcome to the Edge, brains, Linda. Hey, sweetie peach. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, April. How are you?
Oh, I'm just so glad that you decided to come here. I'm just as happy as I can be.
Well, I'm excited.
Yeah, I want to give my brains a little bit of information. We're going to kind of start backwards a little bit on this because I want them to understand what hospice care is. And with your expertise, you're going to break it down with us and let us know the difference between when it is that, you know, that a family member is going to have maybe rehab versus hospice versus independent living. So you're going to explain that to us. But, brains, I want you to know that hospice, the term hospice, is in the same linguistic root as hospitality. It can be traced back to medieval times when it referred to a place of shelter and rest for weary and the ill travelers on long journeys. The name was first applied to specialized care for dying patients by physician Dame Cecil Saunders, who began her work with the terminally ill in 1948 and eventually went on to create the first modern-day hospice. Ms. Saunders introduced the idea of specialized care for dying to the United States during 1963 in her visit to Yale University. So I say a lot of that to say this. What is the difference? And I also want you to explain to our brains, when is it time to start looking for care for your parent?
Well, that's a great question, April. Actually, hospice is more of a philosophy of care rather than a place. Oftentimes when one is diagnosed with an end-of-life disease or diagnoses, individuals often think, well, my loved one is going to pass away. It's imminent. They're going to expire within a month or two. In some instances, that happens, but often, more times than not, once a patient has a definitive life-threatening diagnosis, the physician will look at a plan of care if care is applicable. If they've exhausted, meaning the physician or the treatment physicians, all treatment options, then hospice comes in as a way to offer quality of care and comfort at the end of life. And so basically, one is given their terminal diagnoses. And with hospice, insurances look at the fact that the patient's life expectancy is 6 months or less. Now, that's a standard. However, there are individuals that are on hospice that have been on hospice care, and they're just simply recertified. None of us can play the role of God, and so even though one is given a terminal diagnosis, you never know when that life can terminate, so to speak. So
now, you and I are on two opposite ends. Well, not opposite ends. We're in the same vein, but two different perspectives. Now, Mama done lived with me, girl, for about 15 years. And your mother is in a care facility right now. You know, it's really hard for us to come to the realization of when is it that time to maybe not even hospice, but an assisted care facility. Let me tell you a story.
Right.
A girlfriend of mine, her mother has dementia, and she was holding on and holding on, and she had promised to keep her mother there in the home with her. Until she came home and found her there playing in her defecation, masturbating. Now, I know that that is a visual, but sometimes brains need to know that it comes to a point where you just can't do everything. You can't lift. You can't provide the meals. You can't take care of the, you know, they need to be rotated. You need to kind of keep their mind stimulated. You need to stimulate yourself. So I don't think that people really need to feel guilt, but what do they look for when they look for a quality facility? Because they're scared.
Well, for example, with my mother, this is not a recent diagnosis. My mother was diagnosed over 60 years ago with end-stage lupus. And so she's lived with that for a very, very long time. One of the things that we looked for as far as a facility, there were multiple stages that we went through. You look at the fact that the patient or your loved one has the disease. It's a progressive disease. And so one of the things that we looked for in securing a facility was the quality of care, the rating of the facility, whether or not the facility has any governmental, meaning Medicare, sanctions or otherwise. And so once you have met all of those qualifiers and you're satisfied, then you go in and you do an observation of the facility. You get to know the staff. You go for multiple visits. You see how individuals interact, meaning the caregivers, with the residents. And so we chose a wonderful facility here in Las Vegas where there's a multidisciplinary team that's really engaged in mother's overall care. For example, there's a med tech that disperses her medication. There are caregiver CNAs, certified nursing assistants. Mother is on hospice, so hospice being, again, a philosophy of care, they actually come into the facility, individual nurses, RNs, and oversee her care. If there's any changes, it's noted. But again, with hospice, aggressive treatment options cease, and only comfort measures are the focal point.
Right,
kind
of like
overall.
When you have to go for a consultation of palliative care, because, you know, I'm going to keep it real with y'all right here on the edge, and I'm going to tell you, my mother has renal failure, and they asked her, you know, to go ahead and get a fistula in her arm to prepare her for dialysis, and she said, no, let's go ahead and talk about palliative care, and, you know, I understood what she's saying. At 86 years old, you know, it's not about cure, it's about care. And, you know, the quality of your dignity. You know, these senior citizens are octogenarians, and, you know, they're losing their incognizance, they're taking medication, they're either on dialysis, maybe they're getting treatment for cancer, maybe it's just, you know, a metamorphosis of things that's going on with them. So they, too, are tired. And
you know, sometimes you have caregivers such as myself that we get drained too, because mama can work on my last nerve. Do you hear me? She can draw on the nucleus.
Yes, exactly.
But even with that, you know, I have to, instead of always trying to bring her back to where I am, I have to go to where she is, or I just have to shut it down. You know, step back, take a breath, get a grandma sitter, and just let it be what it is, because it's a process and it's a part of life. In-home services, does your company Quality, do you work with them and refer nurses out there in Las Vegas, a part of your program, to people that need in-home service care?
We do, actually. Quality Home Health is a very progressive, innovative agency here in Vegas. And one of the things
that's
that
right,
we do,
because you're the director.
Yes.
I had to interject that.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, I tell you, I try. I really try.
You are a brain. You are a brain, baby girl.
Well,
you know that.
Due diligence. I think that one of the key factors in our very short mission statement is quality without compromise. And so one of the things that we pride ourselves on is really being very empathetic and putting ourselves in the place of the family and care givers and also the patient, if you will. But consequently, I wanted to focus on something that you had shared just briefly about palliative. And I wanted to share, if I may, just quickly about the difference between palliative care and hospice. With palliative care, there really aren't any specific time restrictions like there are with hospice, being that the terminal disease, the progression within 6 months of a patient's death is to be expected. Again, if a patient surpasses the six-month timeline, then recertification periods are applicable. But with palliative care, again, there's no time restrictions, and really palliative care can be focused on any stage or progression of a patient's disease or diagnoses.
Now,
and
let me ask you a question. I'm sorry, let me interject right in there,
yes,
because that's why I'm a little
yes
bit confused. They will still provide services to sustain your life versus hospice is just to keep you more comfortable, or are they both synonymous? Do both of those programs do the same thing? I'm confused.
Actually, it's what you first stated. It actually helps to sustain the life of the patient, and the differentiators are there is an opportunity for aggressive treatment, for continued treatment, and with hospice, it is simply comfort measures. So, for example, if a woman has metastatic breast cancer,
thank you, everyone, for hanging in here on the edge. We had a little bit of a technical difficulty, but you know how we do it. We get it fixed. So, Linda, where were we, precious? You were telling us about palliative care. Am I saying that correctly? How do you pronounce that?
Yes, it's palliative, and that is that's correct. Palliative care.
Okay.
One of the things that I wanted to focus on was the fact that if a woman is diagnosed with end-stage breast cancer, for example, and the cancer has spread, thus the medical term for that is metastatic, so which means the spreading of. And so, for example, if treatment options are thoroughly exhausted, some choose to go into a homeopathic route, an alternative route. But again, for traditional medicine, if treatment options are exhausted, then that's when hospice can come in and keep that individual quite comfortable. Palliative would no longer be an option because, again, the options have been exhausted. So that's the caveat. And then another thing I wanted to share is that once an individual has a definitive diagnosis, prevention, early detection, all of those things are the catalyst to prevent terminal disease. That's
right.
Why it's important for us to have our colonoscopies, to have our mammograms, to have, you know, the PSA check. The gentlemen need to have those things done. So all
right.
of those things are prevention and early detection opportunities to really, you know, allow us to have quality of life.
I know, because they look all up in your brain, Linda.
Exactly.
They have to. They have to. And I
yes.
tell my brains all the time, this is a rite of passage. We want to talk about the benefits, because I don't believe that the end is the end. I heard that there's a place called glory. I heard that there's joy on the other side. I heard it was a land of milk and honey. Okay? So
exactly.
I'm not going to cry. I'm not going to cry, because it is a rite of passage. One door closes and another one opens. It is transition.
Yes.
It's growth and development. It is a journey, brains. And anything that is born from a seed is organic. And if it is organic, it must expire. So we have to be able to go with that and know that when there is time for a change, be it with ourselves, be it with our family members, that we will trust in our higher God to direct us in the right place and be comfortable with that. What do you tell people in your grief ministry? Because I know you speak to them, girl, in many different languages and many different tongues. But what do you
exactly.
tell them?
Exactly. One of the things that we have to do as caregivers and as community professionals is be aware and conscious of the diversities of individuals. You
yes.
have to be culturally competent and culturally savvy in
yes,
dealing
right.
and respectful of everyone's
yes.
beliefs, whether they're Hindu, whether they're Sikh, whether they're Jewish, whether they're Christian, whether they're Krishna, whatever one's belief systems, you know, are, you have to be cognizant and respectful. So,
well, I really ran into that when I was at,
yes.
excuse me, I'm sorry to interject, but when I was at the American Red Cross, when I went to the American Red Cross, as I told you before, I was inspired by you to volunteer there. But when
Thank
I went
you.
To them, it was during Hurricane Katrina, and there was a cultural disparity. They don't eat tacos. They want etouffee. They're not comfortable
yes.
with that. And so even in, like with we had some Muslims that came, the men and women, you cannot house them in some places in the same place. It was just really, really a lot to be responsible for. But before you conclude with that, I want to ask you to just interject about seniors that have Alzheimer's, because let me tell you this funny story. I'm outside working in the garden with my dog, and over the course of my 31-year marriage to Mr. Magnificent, I have adopted a barrage of animals. I mean, from
yes.
the lizards to the birds to adopting 13 or 14 dogs. So I'm outside, and I see this sweet little lady come down the street. She looks kind of disoriented. And I asked her, was she okay? Because I heard the Lord say, brain, something ain't right.
Yes.
And
yes.
I turn around and look. She didn't know where she was. She didn't have any purse. She didn't have her keys. So I told her, come on in the house and we'll have some lemonade, and I'll introduce her to my mama, and we'll find out where her family is. Well, my daughter,
yeah.
Sparky, Chanel, we call her Sparky, she's looking out the door. She tells my husband, she says, Daddy, Daddy, she says, you ain't going to believe it. Mama done found something else outside. He said, tell her whatever it is, she can't keep it. She said, it's an old lady. He said, we got
yes.
one of them already, and she can't keep it. So, you know, people say, oh, well, you know, my parents, they've never wandered off. Well, they don't wander off until they wander off. Please emphasize
yes.
the importance of, you know, getting them tagged in this day and time. We can even get them a cute tricked-out tattoo. But that's important, isn't it?
Exactly. It really is. One of the things that that is so important is having that patient-physician relationship. Once your loved one has been diagnosed with dementia or Alzheimer's, and there are differences between the two, they're somewhat interchangeable, yet it's a major cognitive decline with individuals that are aging. And oftentimes, dementia is an umbrella that includes impaired thinking, memory loss, cognitive disabilities, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things that, you know, it's almost similar to that of Parkinson's, but one of the things that I would really, really do is keep that physician-patient relationship. Some of the things that are crucial going forward for those that will be or are caregivers is to have and ensure that you have that open line of communication. If you're the power of attorney for your loved one, you want to set the groundwork for all decision-making, whether it's having a POA, whether it's having an advance directive, whether it's having a DNR, which is a do not resuscitate. Those are things that are crucial while that patient has recently been diagnosed, because once that cognitive shift happens, you're really not going to be able, because they're not of sound mind, they're not quite alert or as oriented as they would be prior to the disease, which is progressive. It's a progressive disease.
Wow. Well, that's a lot of responsibility. You know, people just don't want to face that. They just, you know, again, they want to hold on and they want to hold on tight. And I'm so glad that you have brought us all of this valuable information here to The Edge, Linda. You know, I love you deeply and completely.
Love you, too.
I haven't seen you in 20 years, but it feels like after talking to you today, it was yesterday. So you warmed my heart. And
thank
I love
you,
your
April.
Mother. I mean, she is one of my mother girlfriends. We have had so much fun. She has come down here to San Diego and celebrated parties with me. We went over to Mexico. And I tell you, every time you see Celia Bell, she'd be sharp enough to make your eyes bleed.
Yes, and that's hard. You know, it's difficult when you see the changes because, again, if they're incontinent, if they aren't as alert or oriented, if they need full assistance, because, again, the key word is progressive. It's a progressive disease that changes the cognitive, you know, situation of the patient mentally, physically, emotionally, all of those things. They may look at you with a blank stare. And so one of the things that we have to do is prepare ourselves. And this is the one of the final words that I'd like to leave with your listeners is respite. Respite is something that we all need. And in layman's terms, I'm going to tell you, when you're the caregiver and you've had your fill for the week, the month, the day, it's called respite. Retreat, regroup, and then regain. And so those are the things we have to retreat, regroup, and regain in order for ourselves to be apt to be able to support our loved ones. And we need to have that time alone, because we can really wear ourselves out and we won't be valuable to them.
Well, I just got finished. I was a guest on the television show The Doctors at Paramount Studios, and they gave me a fascinating book. It's by AARP, Real Possibilities, Juggling Life, Work, and Caregiving by Amy Goyer. I think it's a phenomenal read. It is a great resource. It has all types of phone numbers and email addresses and websites, everything that you can go to. Speaking of that, before we conclude here on The Edge, please, Linda, give a shout-out to Quality or some groups or organizations that you would like to support and that we can get in contact with in case we need any of these services.
One of the things that I would like to just share is simply utilize your patient advocates in the local acute settings, which are your hospitals. There are patient advocates in every hospital throughout the U.S. of A. So ensure that you're doing your due diligence for yourself and your loved ones by utilizing your case managers, your social workers. Utilize, if an individual is in need, your loved one, your family member, in need of having an RN come into the home for gait issues. Gait is your balance. If you just had a major surgery and you need to have an RN come in, or physical therapist, occupational therapist, the key thing is to be proactive in your own health care. There's so many resources out there. American Cancer Foundation, American Cancer Society, Patient Advocate Foundation. If an individual is in need of having supplemental medications, look for needymeds.org. There are so many resources out in our nation, if you will. Every pharmaceutical company can support you if you're in need of supplemental medications. There's a application that can be filled out for individuals that are having some difficulty in supplementing their medications. There's so many resources out there. Get in touch with your local patient advocate, which can be found in any hospital throughout the U.S. of A.
Well, wow, Linda, thank you so much. And we're going to get in touch with these great organizations. We're going to stay in touch with our God to lead us in the right way.
Yes.
Thank you so much for coming to The Edge. Please come back, share more information.
Will do.
You know, like
thank
I said, you.
You
are my sister and my forever, forever, forever.
I love you as well, April. Wonderful. Thank you.
All right. Be blessed.
And thank
Brains,
you.
Brains, I just want to let you know you can always find more edgy information and conversations right here on Blog Talk Radio. All you got to do is Google me. I'm going to give you my website, April Mahoney. My website is agoodperson.biz. You can touch me anywhere you want to from there. You can like me on Facebook. You can love me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram by going to the website. Again, agoodperson.biz. But until we meet again, be well, Brains. Bye-bye, Linda.
Bye-bye. Thank you, April.
This is the sound of a University of Phoenix student earning a business degree. What you don't hear is the University of Phoenix student studying in between shifts in his two-bedroom apartment while his children sleep. What you don't hear is this student defying the odds to succeed. Shouldn't that student be the candidate you take a longer look at? University of Phoenix. We rise. Learn more at phoenix.edu.